The way you use your time will determine your success more than any other single factor. In our fast-moving high-tech world, time has become the most valuable single factor of production. Virtually every single change that has taken place in business, management, sales, science, technology, telecommunications, and everything else is aimed at reducing the amount of time that it takes to accomplish a particular result. We have moved quickly from thinking in terms of years to months, days, hours, minutes, seconds, milliseconds, and now nanoseconds or tens of thousands of seconds. Today, even instant gratification is not fast enough. I've studied time management for 20 years. I've read countless books, listened to countless audio cassettes, attended numerous time management seminars, and taught time management to many tens of thousands of people. One of the most important things I've learned in all this is that even the way we think about time in order to manage better has changed dramatically in the last few years. Your ability to become an excellent time manager at everything you do will help you to achieve goals far beyond anything you could imagine without these skills. Time is your most precious resource. Virtually everyone starts off with limited money and lots of time. If you're smart, you will trade your time judiciously over the course of your life and end up with lots of money in little time. The very worst option of all is to spend your entire life working and then end up with neither time nor money. Time is perishable. It can't be saved. Therefore, the only thing that you can do with time is to reallocate it. Because you can't save it, you can only channel it toward activities of higher value and away from activities of lower value. Time is indispensable. All work requires time. Even thinking about your work before you begin requires time. Sometimes this thinking and planning of time is the highest payoff time you can invest in any task or project. In the last session, we talked about personal strategic planning. The aim of all strategic planning for corporations is to organize and reorganize the company's assets and activities so as to increase the ROE, the return on equity, or the return on capital invested in the enterprise. The aim of personal time management, on the other hand, is to help you increase your personal ROE, your return on energy, or your return on your human capital, the physical, emotional, and intellectual capital you invest in your life to achieve the results that you want to achieve. You save 10 minutes in execution for every minute that you invest in planning. This means that the very act of planning, thinking on paper before you begin, gives you a 1,000% return on energy. This is one of the highest returns that you can get from anything that you do in life. The more and better you plan, the more and better things you will accomplish. One of the paradigm shifts with regard to time that has taken place in the last few years is the shift from occasional planning to continuous planning, from daily planning to hourly planning, and from general planning to specific, detailed planning of everything you do. Time is irreplaceable. Nothing else will do except time in many areas, especially in relationships with other people. One of your key aims in life in managing your time better in your work is so that you have more time left over to spend with the important people in your life, doing the things that you most enjoy. The ultimate aim of time management is not to make more money or to produce more products or services. It is to increase and expand the quality of your life, and this invariably revolves around your relationships. Fortunately, time management is a skill that can be learned, and as the song says, you can learn it if you try. Every single person becomes a brilliant time manager if he or she wants to badly enough. Sometimes in my seminars, I ask the participants this question. If I could offer you a $100,000 check, bank certified, made out in your name, if you could manage your time perfectly every minute and hour of every day for the next 7 days, how many people here could qualify? Almost everyone in the room will raise their hands. Everyone knows that if the incentive was high enough, they could manage their time excellently for the 7-day period. Now here's the point. If you could do something if your life depended upon it, if you really wanted to and you're not now doing it, it means that you are either uninstructed or unmotivated. The very fact that the average person would say yes to a $100,000 bonus for managing their time excellently for a 7-day period means that the average person is convinced that he or she could do it if he or she wanted to badly enough. And this applies to you as well. I then ask my audiences, What would happen to their lives if they developed the habit of managing their time brilliantly in every area of their lives and carried that habit on for the coming months and years? Would they increase their income or be able to earn $100,000 more by dramatically increasing the quality and quantity of their productivity for the indefinite future? Of course they would. The only question is, how badly do you want it? The most important single value or personal quality necessary for excellent time management is that of self-discipline, which is self-mastery and self-control. It's the ability to take charge of yourself and to discipline yourself to do what you know you should do, when you should do it, whether you feel like it or not. Herbert Gray, who studied successful men and women and compared them to unsuccessful men and women for many years, found that successful people are simply those who make a habit of doing what unsuccessful people don't like to do. And what are those things that unsuccessful people don't like to do? Well, Gray found that they are the same things that successful people don't like to do, but successful people do them anyway. Successful people recognize that they are the true price of the rewards they seek. A major paradigm shift in master strategies for success is when you move from seeing time management as a peripheral or secondary skill in your life to seeing time management as the core skill upon which everything else is based. It's when you go from seeing time management as a planet revolving around yourself as the sun to seeing time management as the sun and everything else you do as the planets. At this point, you realize that time and the minutes and hours of each day are the fundamental building blocks of life, health, happiness, prosperity, and everything else you could ever want. Another master strategy regarding time, perhaps the most important of all, is when you move from short-term thinking to long-term thinking. It's when you move from immediate gratification to delayed gratification, from self-satisfaction to self-denial, from self-expression to self-control, and when you move from a short-time horizon to a long-time horizon. More than 25 years of research concludes that success is largely attitudinal, and it has to do mostly with your attitude toward time. People who continually move upward and onward in their social, business, and financial lives are invariably those people with greater vision than others. They look far into the future and they consider where they want to be in the long term when they engage in their day-to-day activities. Long-time perspective, a long-time horizon, is absolutely essential for high achievement, respect, esteem, and personal pride. When you set 5, 10, and 20-year goals for yourself, for your level of professional capability, for your financial well-being, you will be far more likely to spend your time more productively in the present than you ever would be if you gave no thought to the future at all. And we know this is true for society in general. The most respected people in our society, based on surveys taken year after year, are medical doctors, especially general practitioners. Why is it that doctors are so highly respected? It's simple. We all know from watching television and reading books that doctors have to dedicate 10 to 15 years of their lives to reach the point where they can enter private practice and take care of us and our families when we are ill. After that, they'll have to work hard for several years to pay back the monies they borrowed to get their degrees, and finally, they can enjoy the benefits of a highly paid and respected life in our society. They have long-time perspective. On the other hand, the young person who drops out of high school so he or she can get a job, buy a car, and begin having a good time is a person with a very limited time perspective. Short-term gratification will lead to long-term frustration, unhappiness, and failure in life. The very act of defining your values and then developing a personal strategic plan for your life tends to lengthen your time perspective and make it more and more likely that you will be a great success in the future. This is one of the hardest and most important lessons that we teach to our children and our staff as well. Think long term. A person who is thinking long term doesn't come home at night and sit and watch the television for several hours before dragging themselves off to bed. A person who thinks long term makes far better decisions in the short term. A person with a big plan for his or her life is a person who makes every minute count on a day-to-day basis. A positive mental attitude seems to go hand in hand with great success and accomplishment in virtually every area of life. Everyone wants to be happy, and a positive mental attitude is an outward expression of an inner degree of happiness and personal pride. In turn, the most important ingredient in a positive mental attitude is what psychologists call a sense of control. It is only when you feel that you are in control of the major issues of your life that you feel the very best about yourself and that you perform at your best in what you do. The opposite of a sense of control is a feeling of stress, anxiety, frustration, and a feeling of being controlled by external factors, such as your boss, your bills, your family, your health, and other things. The starting point of all great success and achievement is to get a sense of control over yourself, where you are, and what you're doing. Goals give you a sense of control over the direction of your life, which is why they're so powerful and so closely correlated with success and achievement in the lives of men and women who accomplish a lot. And here's the key point. Time management enables you to control the sequence of events in your life. With time management, you can think through and decide what you'll do first, what you'll do second, and what you will do not at all. Time management allows you to change the sequence of events. And in changing the sequence of events by doing some things first, some other things second, and other things not at all, you change the entire direction of your life, and often in a very short period of time. Your entire life is the sum total result of all the choices and decisions you have made up to this very minute. If you're not happy with any part of your life for any reason, it's up to you to begin making new choices and decisions. Spencer Johnson, in his book Yes or No, says that the starting point of making better decisions is to stop making worse decisions. If you want to start doing better things, you have to stop doing things that are no longer helpful to you. And you are always free to choose. Because you live in a free country with a free society, you can always choose the sequence of events in your life. For this reason, you are totally and unavoidably responsible for every single situation in your life because you have either chosen to get into it or you have chosen to stay in it. In every case, you are free to choose. You can continue what you're doing, do something else, or do nothing at all. In every case, your choices and decisions will add up to the sum total of the person you are and the things that you have and accomplish. Here's a model for you. Imagine that your life and career are similar to a factory, a long factory with raw materials coming in one end and manufactured and finished products coming out of the other end. In this factory, a variety of processes take place. Out of the end of your factory of life comes your health, your wealth, your car, your bank account, your relationships, and everything else. Into the front end of your factory comes the raw material. And the raw material of life is time. Every single person gets 24 fresh, beautiful hours every single day. No matter how badly they may have used their time in the past, they get 24 brand new hours each day just like everyone else on the planet. Now, if for any reason you're unhappy with what's coming out of your factory of life, your job is to go back into the factory and retool. Your job is to change the sequence of activities, to change the sequence of events in your life. It is to do more of some things and less of others. It is to start some new things up and to stop some old things off. It is to change your production process so that what comes out of the other end of your factory, which is made up by the way you use your time on a minute-to-minute, hour-to-hour basis, is different and better than what is coming out today. What are you trying to do and how are you trying to do it? Whatever your experience, frustration, or dissatisfaction for any reason, pull back and ask these key questions. What am I trying to do? How am I trying to do it? And then here is the kicker question. Could there be a better way? Peter Drucker wrote that errant assumptions lie at the root of every failure. Wrong assumptions based on wrong information or wrong conclusions usually lie at the root of all of our problems. In any situation in your life where you are not happy with the result, you should ask yourself, what are my assumptions? And here's an even more important question. What if my assumptions were wrong? Sometimes you may find yourself working toward a goal. You can ask yourself, what am I trying to do? And how am I trying to do it? And then you can ask yourself, what are my assumptions? And could my assumptions be wrong? It could very well be that the goal you are working toward is not as important to you now as it was when you first began. it might not be important to you at all. If you don't question your assumptions, you will often find yourself working away toward achieving something that you don't particularly want. You will find your energy and motivation declines on a daily basis, and you won't know why. The reason may be that your assumptions about who you are and what you want have changed since you began your journey in a particular direction. One of the most important words in time management is the word no. Always be prepared to say no to anything that is not consistent with your highest and most important goals and which is not the best use of your time in achieving those goals. Don't allow yourself to be sidetracked by the requests or demands of other people. The more clear you are about what you really want in life, the easier it will be for you to say yes to the things that move you toward it and no to the things that move you away. And remember, everything counts. Everything either helps you or hurts you in some way. One of the key paradigm shifts in time management for you is to think in terms of leverage or personal multiplication rather than in terms of single events or activities or personal efforts. Let me explain. Leverage is concerned with your thinking through the long-term potential consequences of your behaviors. Your ability to analyze the potential consequences of what you do is the essence of intelligence and long-term thinking. There are some things that you do that have no consequences at all. These are invariably of low priority and value. There are other things that you can do that can have enormous long-term potential consequences. These are often the most valuable and productive things you can do with your time. Stephen Covey says that we spend most of our time doing the things that are most urgent and important, the things that are right there in your face at this very moment. You have places to go, people to see, and things to do. However, the point that Stephen Covey makes is that high productivity comes from doing things that are important, but not necessarily urgent. These are the things that can have long-term value in your life. For example, reading a book that increases your knowledge and ability may be important, but it's not urgent. Anything that is important but not urgent is something that you can quite easily procrastinate on, and most people do, which is why most people fail to fulfill their potentials. Playing with your children when you come home at night is important, but not necessarily urgent. You can put it off if you need to. But the long-term consequences of playing with your children every night can be extraordinary. If you play with your children a lot, your children will grow up feeling valuable and important and worthwhile. In turn, they'll attract into their lives other people with high self-esteem, self-respect, and personal character. They will associate with better friends, marry better people, and raise better children. In turn, their children will raise better, happier, healthier children as well. So playing with your children when you come home at night can have consequences that affect your family for 2 and 3 generations. This is obviously a very important activity, even though it may not be extremely urgent at the time. Just as you need to take the long view in order to be a great success in life, you must also take the short view. You must allocate your time in 10 and 15 minute blocks. In every study, we have found that tight time planning goes hand in hand with high productivity and high income. The more fastidious you are about planning your time in advance, the more you'll get done. The more you get done, the more you'll be paid, and the more doors of opportunity will open up to you. Ineffective people think in terms of days and weeks. They say things like, "Well, I'll give you a call over the next couple of weeks." On the other hand, the highly effective person checks his or her time planner and says, "I will give you a call on Tuesday afternoon between 2 and 4. Where will you be at that time?" I work with multi-million-dollar executives around the country who will pre-arrange telephone appointments scheduled to last no more than 10 minutes that will sometimes take place in their chauffeured limousines between appointments. One very successful executive in New York, who, by the way, started off selling on the street from office to office and who is now worth many millions of dollars, recently set up an appointment just like this. He had me phone him in his car at 3:05, New York time, for an appointment that would take 10 minutes. He got into his car at 3:00, and he was at his next appointment at 3:20, and in those 10 minutes we covered every key point and wrapped up the conversation. Do you become successful and then begin to plan your time tightly because you're so busy, or do you plan your time in very small amounts and then become successful? I think the answer is clear. The tighter you plan your time, the better use you will make of it. the better use you make of your time, the more you will produce, the more you will earn, and the faster you will move ahead in whatever you're doing. Here's another critical way of thinking about time. It's called the law of the excluded alternative. This law says that doing one thing means not doing something else. Since you can only do one thing at a time, whatever you choose to do at any given moment, you are simultaneously choosing not to do everything else that you could possibly do at that same moment. This is an extremely important point for high effectiveness. If you're not careful, you will choose to do the things that are fun, easy, and immediate. You will do the urgent and important. You will respond to the ringing telephone or the person walking in. You'll be reactive rather than proactive, and your time will belong to whoever comes along and grabs a piece of it. However, it's often the things that you are not doing while you are doing the things that you are doing that are the more important. A corollary of this law is that every action or inaction involves a choice that you make between what you feel is more important and what you feel is less important. Again, since you can only do one thing at a time, everything you do or don't do is a choice, and the quality of your choices adds up to the quality of your life. If you choose to go out socially with one person, you are simultaneously choosing not to go out socially with all other people in the world at that time. If you choose to call on one prospect or customer, you are choosing not to call on all other prospects and customers. If you choose to watch television, you are consciously choosing not to spend time with your family, or time physically exercising or intellectually growing by reading or studying. You must be very careful and be consciously aware of what you are choosing not to do whenever you're making a decision to do something else. The key word here, again, is consequences. As I said before, consequences are everything. When we talk about leverage, we're talking about consequences. There are some things that you do that give you tremendous leverage. These are often called points of intensity. If you do something at a point of intensity and you do it well, it can give you enormous power to be effective in many other areas of your life. For example, everyone has strengths and weaknesses in their work and careers. But what we know is that the height of your success is often determined by your weakest key area. If you have 5 to 7 critical success factors or key result areas in your life, your ability to use all of your skills and talents will be determined by your weakest or slowest area. Let me give you an example. A gentleman in one of my seminars, a professional salesman, was excellent in every part of selling except prospecting. When he learned this principle from me, he realized that his poor prospecting skills were holding him back more than anything else in his life. He resolved at that moment to become absolutely excellent in prospecting. For the next 6 months, he read every book, listened to every tape, and took every seminar that he could find. On top of that, he got up early, worked harder, and stayed later, forcing himself to overcome his fears and to call on new prospects, both by telephone and in person. By the end of 6 months, he had completely overcome his weakness in that area. And the marvelous thing was that his sales and his income had gone up almost 400% in the same period of time. By filling his pipeline with prospects, he was able to use all his other talents and skills to the full, and he changed his entire life and the life of his family. What are your points of intensity? What are the things that you can learn or do that will give you tremendous leverage? What are the things that you can focus on that can have enormous positive consequences in your career? When we talk about making daily lists, one of the very best ways that you can set priorities on your list is to use the A, B, C, D, E method. In this method, an A task is something that goes to the very top of your list. It is more important than anything else. If you have several A tasks, then you organize them in terms of A1, A2, A3, and so on. An A task is defined as something for which there are serious consequences for failure or success, if you do it or don't do it. A B task is something that you should do. It is helpful and appreciated, but it only has mild consequences for success or failure. The rule is that you should never do a B task when there is an A task still left undone. A C task, on the other hand, is one that would be nice to do, but which has no consequences at all. Having a coffee break, going out to lunch, or reading the newspaper would all be nice to do, but they have absolutely no potential consequences on your life, one way or another. The D in this ABCDE model stands for delegate. When you look at a task on your list of things to do, always ask yourself whether or not it could be done by someone else. And the rule is for you to delegate everything conceivably possible so that you can have more time to do the few things that you can do that can really make a difference. The final E stands for eliminate. Many of the tasks that you are doing today are tasks that you have inherited from previous months and years. Many of them have no real relevance or value anymore. Your ability to eliminate tasks and activities from your life is absolutely critical to your success. Let me explain. A major thinking shift that high achievers make is from priorities to posteriorities. It is from thinking in terms of what they must do more of and sooner to thinking in terms initially of what they should do less of and later. The setting of posteriorities, the creative abandonment of tasks and activities that are no longer of high value, is absolutely essential to high accomplishment. In setting posteriorities, before you begin any new task, you must consciously decide what old tasks you're going to stop doing. Remember, your dance card is full. You are completely booked. You have no spare time. You are probably listening to this in your car as you drive from one activity to another. You're overwhelmed with too much to do and too little time to do it in. Therefore, whenever you consider a new task or activity, you must simultaneously consider what task or activity you are going to cut down on, get out of, or discontinue altogether. Picking up means putting down. Grabbing hold means letting go. Getting in means getting out. Setting priorities means setting posteriorities as well. Sometimes the very best way for you to get control of your time and your life and improve the quality and quantity of your results is to set very clear posteriorities and totally discontinue tasks that are taking up too much of your time and contributing too little value. Your question to yourself is, what should be my posteriorities? Another law used by high performers is the law of forced efficiency. This law says that there's never enough time to do everything, but there's always enough time to do the most important things. High performance is totally dependent upon your ability to decide on the most productive things that you could be doing every minute of every hour. There are four key questions that you can ask yourself continually to keep your mind focused on the most important activities you could be engaged in. The first question is, what are my highest value activities? What are the things that you do that contribute the very most value to your life and work? Who are your highest value prospects and customers, and what are your highest value activities in serving those customers? All of reorganization, reengineering, restructuring, and reinventing are aimed at constantly moving people and resources around so that they are contributing the highest value to customer satisfaction. Your highest value at home is almost invariably spending time with the most important people in your life. Everything else you do at home is secondary to that. The second question is, what are my key result areas? What are the things that you do that your success or failure in your career are dependent upon? A key result area is an area for which you are completely responsible and for which there is a specific measurable outcome. What are yours? Your ability to ask and answer this question and then to perform excellently in your key result areas is the key to your future. This is a question you must think about and answer very carefully. The third question in the law of forced efficiency is simply this: why are you on the payroll? If someone were to ask you why they paid you money where you work, what would you answer in 25 words or less? In other words, what specific valuable units of work or specific results do you trade with your company for the money that they pay you? Now, this may seem like an obvious question, but it is absolutely amazing how few people in the world of work today have any real understanding of the relationship between what they do and what they get paid. They often ask for increases in pay, believing that the amounts that they receive in their paycheck are completely subjective and determined by whether or not the boss feels good or whether or not the boss likes them. In reality, the amount you receive in your paycheck is a specific reward allocated for the specific contribution that you make to the product or service that is ultimately sold to the final customer. If you want to increase your rewards, you have to increase your contribution. We'll talk about this a little bit more later. The fourth question, and one of my very favorites, is this. What can you, and only you, do that, if done well, will make a real difference? There's always something that you and only you can do that, if you do it well, will make a real difference to your work and to your family. If you don't do this particular task, it won't get done. And if you do it in an excellent fashion, it will make a real contribution. There's usually, by the way, only one answer to this question as well, even though the answer may change over time. High achievers also use another powerful thinking tool in organizing their time. It's perhaps one of the most powerful of all thinking tools in high performance and high productivity. It's based on the theory of constraints developed by the Israeli efficiency expert named Elihu Goldratt. The beauty and power of this principle is in its simplicity. The theory of constraints simply says that between where you are and wherever you want to end up, your goal, there is a constraint that determines the speed at which you achieve that goal. Let me give you an example. Imagine that you wanted to drive from the city where you live to another city 200 miles away. The city 200 miles away is your goal. So I ask you this question. How long does it take for you to drive from your city to the other city, from city A to city B? Your answer would probably be that it would take about 3 hours from the time you left to the time you got there on an open highway. I then ask you the following question. Did you know that there is a construction zone on the road and all the traffic has been narrowed down so that it goes through a single lane in both directions? Then I would ask, how long would it now take you to go from city A to city B? And the only answer that you could possibly give that would be accurate would be, that depends. It depends on how long it takes you to get through the construction zone. In your life, there are always construction zones or constraints that determine how fast you get to where you want to go. These are often called bottlenecks or choke points. Andrew Grove, in his book High Output Management, refers to these as limiting steps. You can think of them as limiting factors that exist in every area of activity in your life. When you get up in the morning, what determines the speed at which you get to work? Your first constraint in the morning will probably be the time you get up. Your second constraint may be the time you get out of the house. Your third constraint may be the type of traffic that you have to go through, and so on. What you need to know about constraints is that once you alleviate one constraint or bottleneck, another one appears that you had not seen or paid attention to before you had taken care of the first. The key to high effectiveness is to think continually in terms of the factors that limit or determine the speed at which you achieve your goals. There are two types of constraints, internal and external. An internal constraint is something within yourself. It's a lack of skill, ability, knowledge, application, discipline, or something else. It can be within your company. An external constraint is something that is contained within the situation around you. You may or may not have control over an external constraint. And the 80-20 rule applies to constraints. Fully 80% of the limitations on how fast you achieve your goals are within yourself or within your current organization. Only 20% are in the outside world. So when you find yourself not making the kind of progress that you want toward the kind of goals that you set, always ask yourself this key question. What is it in me that is holding me back from achieving this goal? What is it in you that is setting the speed? Always accept complete responsibility for getting from wherever you are to wherever you want to go, and always look into yourself first for the constraint or the limiting factor that may be holding you back. Your ability to use your time well and to think skillfully about the allocation and deployment of your time is the critical determinant or constraint on everything you accomplish in your work and personal life. The most productive and highest paid people are those who think the very best about their time and how to use it well on an hourly basis. They know that casualness with regard to time usage leads to casualties in their external worlds. They give a lot of thought to where they are and where they're going and to how they can get there faster by using their time more effectively. The most important question in time management, and the question around which all time management teaching revolves, is simply this. What is the most valuable use of my time right now? Of all the things you could possibly be doing, your ability to accurately answer that question and then to concentrate single-mindedly on that activity will do more to help you to succeed than any other decision you could make. All of life is a matter of habits. Successful people have good habits which lead onward and upward. Unsuccessful people have bad or destructive habits which lead them continually downward or, in many cases, nowhere at all. The most important habits you form are with regard to how you use your time and your life. When you develop the habit of clearly defining the most valuable use of your time every minute and then concentrating single-mindedly on accomplishing that one task and staying with it until it's complete, your future is virtually assured. Your rewards will always be determined by your results. If you want to increase the quantity of your rewards, you must increase the quantity of your results. And your results will always be determined by your ability to focus your time single-mindedly on those things that make the greatest single contribution to the world around you. When you make a habit of doing this, you will take full control over your time and your life, and you will get more done in a couple of years than the average person gets done in 10 or 20. One of the most important responsibilities you have to yourself and the people around you is for you to achieve your own financial independence over the course of your working lifetime. The primary reason why people are worried, anxious, insecure, angry, and even physically ill is money problems and money worries of some kind. And it's never because they have too much. It's because they have too little. Most people get up and start thinking about their money problems first thing in the morning. They talk about them over breakfast. They think about them as they drive to work, and they worry about them all day long. At night, much of their conversation revolves around money, how little they have, how much everything costs, their bills, their taxes, their futures, and the instability of their economic environment. Many people stay awake at night, tossing and turning, worrying about money. Perhaps you know what I'm talking about. At the same time, there have never been more opportunities for the average person to achieve financial independence in history than there are today, around you, right now. As I mentioned earlier, we are entering into a golden age where there are more products, processes, services, possibilities, and opportunities available to you to fulfill your destiny and achieve economic security than ever before. However, the competition is stiffer, the situation is more fluid, the changes are more unpredictable, and the opportunities are more fleeting than they ever have been as well. To survive and thrive in today's complex, fast-changing economy, it's absolutely essential that you change your thinking in several specific ways. The first mental shift is from financial independence by accident to financial independence by design. Financial independence must be the centerpiece of all your work and external activities. Achieving financial independence must not be something that happens in a random or haphazard way, like winning the lottery or inheriting a lot of money from an unknown relative. Financial independence must be something that you specifically think about, define, and plan for continuously, like breathing in and breathing out. It must become a part of your entire worldview. The great majority of people tend to be reactive. They stumble along from situation to problem to situation year after year, getting a little bit ahead and then a little bit behind and ending up in their 40s and 50s still wondering and worrying about money. A recent survey found that the median household net worth in America was $7. The average, which is different from the median, was about $2,000. The average retired person in America, after 45 years of hard work in the most affluent economy that the world has ever seen or known, has a net worth of approximately $31,000, plus whatever entitlements they have to Social Security and other pensions. In every case where this happens, they left financial independence to be achieved accidentally, continually hoping for the best and shrugging their shoulders resignedly when it never happened. Today, just as you design your dream house, you must design your dream financial future. You must think long-term, many years down the road, and make an absolutely clear decision that you are going to achieve specific financial goals on a timetable, year by year, until you reach the point where you never have to work again unless you want to. In the book The Instant Millionaire, the older wealthy man asks the young man what he wants to accomplish in life. The young man says that he wants to be a millionaire. The old man then asks this critical question, "Why aren't you?" This is a great question. Whenever you think of anything that you want to be, have, or do in your life, you should stop and ask yourself, "Why aren't I there already? What is it in me that's holding me back from achieving that goal? What is it in my external world that's holding me back or limiting my possibilities? Why aren't I happy, thin, wealthy, independent, or at the top of my field right now? Why aren't you?" What will pop into your mind in response to that question is all of your favorite excuses. As Mark Twain once wrote, "There are 1,000 excuses for every failure, but never a good reason." The great danger is that we can fall in love with our excuses and eventually come to believe they are true. Once we believe they are true, by the law of belief, they will become true for us. I have a formula for analyzing possible excuses. It's simply this. Whenever you think of one of your most treasured excuses for not doing something, ask yourself if there is anyone else in the world around you who has the same excuse but who has managed to accomplish great things in spite of it. Is there anyone with your same problem or limitation who has overcome it and gone on to achieve their goals and become financially independent? If you are honest with yourself, you will immediately admit that there are many thousands, perhaps tens of thousands of people who have had it far worse than you could ever imagine who have gone on to do great things with their lives nonetheless. But you must get your excuses out of the way. One of the most important paradigm shifts you can make is from a focus on making excuses to a focus on making progress. As they say, obstacles are what you see when you take your eyes off of your goal. You must move from being casual about money to being serious about money. Most people, when you ask them about their financial futures, will be vague and nonspecific. They will be trapped in the world of, "Someday I'll." "Someday I'll start an investment account." "Someday I'll start saving a certain percentage of my income." "Someday I'll pay off my bills." "Someday I'll take that course that will enable me to increase my income," and so on. Don't you get lost in the land of someday. People who get lost out there often never come back. One of the things we know about money is that money goes where it is appreciated. It goes where it is taken seriously. It goes to those people who value it and treasure it and respect it and look up to it and honor it and guard it once they have it. Money, in a way, has a personality of its own. And the more serious you are about money, the more serious money will be about you. A billionaire who had established hundreds of companies over the years was once asked how it was that he had managed to become so successful. He said that he had just two rules for financial accumulation. Rule number one was, don't lose money. He had concluded as a young man that it was better not to do anything at all than to take a risk of losing the money. If you lose the money, you see, it sets you back by the amount of time and the amount of life that it took you to accumulate that money in the first place. It's far better to put your money into a no-risk, interest-bearing account than it is to take a chance on losing the money and be set back to where you have to start over again. His second rule was, when in doubt, refer back to rule number one. Whenever you're tempted to take a flyer for any reason, refer back to rule number one. Don't lose money. In the Bible it says a fool and his money are soon parted. In the modern world we say, when a man with money meets a man with experience, the man with experience is going to end up with the money, and the man with the money is going to end up with the experience. The only thing easy about money is losing it. Everything else is hard, very hard, and extremely hard. An old Japanese proverb says, making money is like digging in the sand with a needle. Losing money is like pouring water on the sand. Developing the ability to acquire and accumulate money is one of the most important of all skills that you can ever develop. And, at the very least, when you do accumulate a little money, be absolutely fanatical about not losing it. I found that whenever a person reaches the point in their own thinking where they say to themselves, "I can afford to lose a little in this situation in exchange for the potential upside," they are not only going to lose a little when they say that, they're going to lose a lot, and the profits will probably never materialize. You've heard it said that the role of business and entrepreneurs is to take risks. You have to take risks if you want to make money. You have to stick your neck out if you want to get your head above the crowd. These little ideas are partially true and largely false. Of course, it's true that you have to do something different from what you're doing if you want to achieve something different from what you're achieving. But people who are financially successful are not those who deliberately and consciously take risks. They are those who deliberately and consciously avoid risks. They are very intelligent about deploying their funds and other resources in such a way that they minimize the risks and they maximize the possible returns. They think continually in terms of not losing money. And as a result, they are very cautious and prudent when it comes to allocating their financial resources. That being said, another mental shift you have to make in achieving financial independence is from a survival consciousness to a prosperity consciousness. Most people, unfortunately, are locked into a survival consciousness. They are worried, guarded, and careful about money. Their first question in looking at anything is, how much is it? Followed up by their favorite song, I can't afford it. Successful people think in terms of prosperity rather than survival. They move from limitation thinking to abundance thinking. They look upon the world around them as being full of opportunities to acquire and keep the money, and they are constantly looking for ways to do it. They look at every new product and process, every technological market breakthrough, as a possible opportunity to prosper in some way. Instead of thinking about how little they have, they are thinking about how much they want to acquire. They are the people who, when somebody asks them how the recession is affecting them, they say they had heard there was a recession, but they had decided not to participate. What is the source of wealth in our society? Where does money, wealth, and financial independence come from? Well, there's only one place. It comes from serving customers in some way. Money has no value except to the degree to which it can be deployed to satisfy the needs of people. As soon as money stops serving the needs of people, it quickly disappears. Even the largest company in America is not immune to this principle. And when we talk about serving other people, we are talking about adding value to their lives and to their work. Every purchase is an exchange of money for a product or service. The person who has the money must be convinced that he or she will be better off with a product or service than they would be with the money, or than they would be with something else they could buy. Every purchase decision is a choice between what is more important, the product or service, and what is less important, the money or the alternative purchases available at that time. The way to create wealth is to create value. The way to create lots of wealth is to create lots of value, to serve lots of people, to provide lots of people with the benefits that they can and will enjoy more than the money they will have to pay to acquire them. This is why people with an abundance mentality see every new change as a possible opportunity to give and create value that other people are willing and able to pay for. Debbie Fields found that the way to create value was as simple as baking chocolate chip cookies with first-class ingredients. In a few years, Debbie Fields' cookie store spread all over the world and became one of the most successful businesses ever developed. Someone else does it with a microchip, and then an even faster microchip, and then an even faster microchip still. Others do it with services. Remember, the fundamental sources of value today are time and knowledge. It's your ability to acquire the knowledge you need and to apply it in a timely fashion to create value for someone else that assures that you will achieve the financial independence that you desire. Another shift in thinking regarding money and you is from security thoughts to opportunity thoughts. You don't become financially independent by playing it safe all the time. You become financially independent by leading the field. This doesn't mean that you risk your money or throw it around. It means that you are willing to move out of your comfort zone and to try something new and different before everyone else starts trying it or doing it. I've met countless salespeople and businessmen around the country who changed their entire lives by recognizing an opportunity and taking action on it before the vast majority of people woke up to it. By the time the dust had settled, they were well established and had made more money in 3 or 4 years than they might have made in 30 or 40 years doing something else in an established field. One of the most important principles of money is that you must move from an attitude that repels money to an attitude that attracts money. When I introduced the law of attraction, I said that you invariably attract into your life people and circumstances that are in harmony with your dominant thoughts. Many years ago, when I first read about the prosperity consciousness described by Napoleon Hill, I didn't fully understand what it meant. Napoleon Hill was clear in saying that the wealthiest people in America were those who had adopted this kind of prosperity consciousness. But what exactly was it? Later, I learned that a prosperity consciousness is a calm, confident belief that everything that is happening is for the good and is moving you toward the accomplishment of your clear, specific written goals, including your financial goals. This attitude of confident expectation creates a force field of mental energy around you that starts to attract into your life people and opportunities that will help you to achieve your financial goals. One of the most important things you can do in becoming financially independent is to begin to admire, respect, and look up to those who are ahead of you on the road to wealth. You should become fascinated by men and women who have begun with nothing and who've achieved large fortunes. You should read about them, study them, talk about them, and encourage other people to admire them as well. In a multi-year study on households that produced high-performing young people, they found that the family dinner table conversation had a vital influence on forming the young minds that then went on to be financially successful as adults. And one of the chief focuses around the family dinner table was admiring or positive conversation about other men and women who had achieved good things, both within the extended family and in the outside world. As a result, young people grew up with the idea that it was good and worthwhile and even necessary to be successful in their lives and careers. They were taught at an early age to admire those who had gone before them and had achieved great things through performing in an excellent fashion at what they did. The kindest thing that you can do for yourself is to study wealth. Read books about wealthy people, especially about those who started poor. Look at the wealthy people around you and wish them well. When you read about them or hear about them or someone mentions them, you should praise them and talk about them in positive terms. Never allow yourself to slip into that slimy trap where you criticize or badmouth financially successful people because you feel jealous or resentful of what they've accomplished in comparison to you. This little attitude of resentment is invariably fatal to success. It sabotages a person subconsciously so that they have a mental block to doing the things that they need to do to enjoy the same financial success as the person who has already accomplished it. If you love your children, encourage them to admire and respect others who have achieved great success. And financial success is not the only success. It's probably more important for people to admire and look up to those who have achieved excellence in their various fields. Excellence in any field almost invariably leads to high earnings and, ultimately, financial independence. So, excellence is more to be admired initially than financial accumulation, but never, never allow yourself or anyone else to criticize or denigrate those who have made it in their businesses or in their careers. Another mental shift you must make is to move from spending to saving. W. Clement Stone said that, "If you cannot save money, the seeds of greatness are not in you." We grow up from a young age spending everything we can get our hands on and a little bit more besides. The average young married couple in America spends 110% of their income, making up the difference with credit and loans from their families. With this attitude and approach to life, especially when it becomes a habit, their ability to save, accumulate, and acquire wealth is almost zero. In Klassen's famous book, The Richest Man in Babylon, he gives the fundamental rule for all financial independence. It is simply to pay yourself first. This means that whenever you get your paycheck, instead of saving what is left over, you save off the top and spend what is left over. This attitude of saving before spending will change your entire life and will virtually guarantee that you solve all your financial problems, get out of debt, acquire money, and eventually become wealthy. It's so powerful that it is taught as a central truth by every financial planner and consultant everywhere. Of course, going back to our discussion of long-time perspective, this means that you must shift your thinking from immediate gratification to delayed gratification. All economic success is the result of delayed gratification. All economic success comes as a result of your developing the ability to deny yourself pleasures in the short term so that you can enjoy greater rewards and pleasures in the long term. This is why self-discipline is a foundation value of both character and success. Without the discipline to restrain yourself from spending everything you make and a little bit more besides, you have no hope of ever getting out of your career with enough money in the bank so that you never have to worry about it again. And here is a miraculous discovery. Anything that you invest emotion in takes on a certain life of its own. A force field of energy develops around it. As a result, it begins to attract other things that are similar to it. The law of attraction says that birds of a feather flock together. Like attracts like. Similar items are attracted to each other over time and space. This means that when you begin saving money, the money that you have saved, especially if you invest your positive emotions of hope and confidence and optimism in that money, begin to attract additional money. It's the most incredible thing. For example, when I suggest that you save money, your very first excuse, your favorite excuse, will be that you don't earn enough, your bills and taxes are too high, and you are probably deeply in debt. How can you possibly save money under these circumstances? It's simple. Each night when you come home, take your change or your $1 bills and put them in a large jar. Anyone can save a few coins, a few nickels, dimes, or quarters each day. It doesn't have to be very much. It just has to be a little to start the process working, like a little kindling to start a much larger fire. Once you put this money into a piggy bank or a fruit jar, resolve to never touch it or draw upon it. This money is the beginning of your journey toward financial independence. When the jar fills up, as it will after a few months, take it down and put it into a bank account. This bank account is money that you never, never touch for any reason at all. It is long-term money that you are putting aside to invest in your future. Your ability to do this, to never touch this money for short-term expenditure, will be a true test of your character and the true test of your determination to actually become wealthy over the course of your lifetime. Your initial goal is to begin paying yourself 1% of your monthly earnings off the top. No matter how deeply in debt you are, you can begin saving 1%, and putting your change away each night is a good beginning. Write it down as a goal. If you make $2,000 per month, resolve to save $20 each month, or $10 out of each paycheck. Once you are comfortable with putting away a 1%, increase your savings level to 2%, then 3%, 4%, and so on. Your goal is over the next year or two to get your savings rate up to 10%, then 15%, 20%, and 25% of your gross earnings. You organize your life so that you live comfortably on the balance. In study after study on financial independence, it's generally agreed by every expert that you have to save approximately 20 to 30% of your income if you want to finally reach the point where you have enough money so that you don't have to ever worry about it again. The wonderful thing is that once you begin saving more and more of your income off the top and living on the rest, you will find that you experience no discomfort at all. You become quite comfortable living on a lesser amount. But the best thing of all is the way you feel about yourself when you have money put away. A person with money in the bank who is ahead of the financial curve feels far different about himself or herself than a person with no money in the bank who feels behind the curve and is finding themselves with too much month and too little money. The confidence that you have from building a financial fortress brick by brick flows over into everything else you do. You become a more positive person in all your relationships. You become happier and healthier. You no longer find yourself preoccupied with money. As a result, you can turn your mind to other things and to enjoying some of the other areas of your life. You get greater pleasure out of your relationships and your family. You're more confident and optimistic at work. You are more cheerful and self-assured. As a result, more people want to be involved with you. You are much more likely to be promoted into positions of greater responsibility, affecting greater numbers of people. It's the most incredible thing. And here's an even better thing that happens. The money that you begin to save begins to vibrate in some unknown way, and you begin to attract new money into your life. Someone will offer to pay you back an old debt, and you add it to your financial accumulation account. Someone else offers to buy something that you stopped using a long time ago and you get some more cash. You even find money in the street and get unexpected tax refunds. You win small prizes and get bonuses at work. The most amazing things happen to you, and as long as you keep putting these amounts, large and small, into your financial accumulation account, the more energy this account develops and the more powerful its attraction becomes to even more money. It took me many years to understand this principle, and then I remembered those words, success breeds success. It takes money to make money. What did this mean? It means that when you begin to enjoy a little success, it makes you happier, more positive, and more optimistic, which attracts more success opportunities into your life. When you begin to accumulate money, the money itself sends out positive signals and begins to attract more money into your life. When your attitude toward money starts to become positive, optimistic, and abundance-oriented, you begin to find all kinds of opportunities to acquire and to accumulate more and more money. And this process will continue as long as you remember the two rules about money. Rule number one is, don't lose money. Rule number two is, whenever you feel tempted, refer back to rule number one. Financial accumulation requires a shift from wishing and hoping to thinking and doing. Don't talk to anyone else about your plans and your financial activities. Begin to accumulate money quietly and confidentially. Once you begin putting it away, don't ever let anyone know how much you have. Refuse to engage in conversations about money or to tell anyone about your financial accumulation account. There is something about keeping your plans and processes secret that gives them strength and power and causes them to work even more effectively for you. You will find that wealthy people never talk to others about their money. They are extremely private. They have learned over time that the more secretive they are, the more effective they seem to be in acquiring and keeping ever greater amounts of money. The road to financial independence is and always has been the miracle of compound interest. When you begin putting money away and then investing it carefully to build a financial estate, the miracle of compound interest clicks in. It's been said that if someone invested a dollar at 3% interest at the time of Christ, as a result of compound interest, it would be worth all the money in the world today. This is why it is never necessary for you to take risks with your money. It is better that you invest it carefully in a well-managed mutual fund family and watch it carefully than that you attempt to make a lot of money quickly by investing in something far riskier. Is there a time for you to take a risk? Of course there is. But you risk with your time and energy, not with your money. Never risk your money on someone else's entrepreneurial idea, for example. If you think it's a good idea, get involved and contribute your time. Most entrepreneurial ventures fail, and virtually all entrepreneurial ventures that you invest in will tend to fail. I don't know why it is, but you can accept it as a fact, especially since your rule is to not lose money. Here's another paradigm shift. It's from making money to keeping money. Remember, it's not how much you make, but how much you keep that counts. There are an enormous number of people who earn a lot of money, but they spend every cent and a little bit more besides. There are others who earn far less, but their focus and attention is on how much of the money they earn each month that they can hold on to after all their expenses. They are the people who inevitably end up at the top of the financial pyramid. My father-in-law, Bill, is a remarkable man. He quit school in the fourth grade to go to work on a farm. The only job he could ever get throughout his life was as a night watchman, and for 20 years he was a night watchman and cleanup man in a packing plant. He went off to work at 10 o'clock at night and didn't come home till 7 or 8 the next morning. He was seldom paid much more than the minimum wage, but he was very careful with his money. He was not casual. He was serious because he realized that he didn't have a lot of flexibility. So he cut every conceivable corner. He saved every possible Coke bottle and every single penny he could get from cashing them in. Bill went on to marry Teresa and raised 10 children. He retired a couple of years ago, owning two houses, both paid in full, and one yielding regularly monthly rentals. He had money in the bank and a pension fully funded. He has never been in debt and has never accepted a handout in his life. Even starting off with limited resources, he has been able to make his life a personal and financial success, and his achievement is based on hard work, self-discipline, and regular savings over the course of his working lifetime. Just as income and wealth are the result of creating value for others, the major shift you must make to financial independence is from getting to giving, and from thinking about how much you are receiving to concentrating on how much you are serving other people. As Earl Nightingale used to advise, you should ask of yourself each day, what can I do to to increase the value of my service to my customers today. One of the keys to financial accumulation is to always be thinking in terms of putting in rather than taking out. Always be thinking in terms of sowing rather than reaping. Always be thinking in terms of increasing your income rather than restricting your outgo. In 1956, a philosopher named C. Northcote Parkinson wrote a series of laws, including financial laws. One of them became known as Parkinson's Main Law. It said that expenses invariably rise to meet income. Parkinson's law states that no matter how much you make, you will always spend it because you will increase your expenditures in tandem with your increases of income. Sometimes I ask my seminar audiences if they would like to be financially independent. Almost everyone responds with a loud, yes. I then ask them the key question, why aren't you? At which point, some people say, well, my bills, my taxes, my low income, and so on. So I ask them this follow-up question. If I could double or triple or even increase your income by 5 or 10 times, would that enable you to become financially independent? By this time, the audience is largely silent. Surprisingly enough, few people nod and agree. A few hands will go up and people will say, yes, if I could double or triple my income, I could become financially independent. I then ask the final question. How many people here today, from the time they started working until now, have already increased their income by 2, 3, 4, 5, and even 10 times? Every hand in the audience goes up. Every single person has already increased their income 2, 3, 4, 5, or 10 times, and sometimes more. And they still have financial problems. They still have too much month at the end of the money. They're still in debt and worried and uptight about their finances. What is the reason for this? It is Parkinson's law. No matter how much more they have learned, they've increased their expenditures until they meet or surpass their new level of earnings. Here's the key to financial independence. It is to break Parkinson's law. It is to consciously and deliberately contradict Parkinson's law, to break the law in your own financial life. The key to financial success and financial accumulation is and always has been the same. It is to spend less than you earn and then save or invest the balance and never, never spend it. If you can spend less than you earn and eventually 10%, 20%, and 30% less than you earn and save or invest the difference carefully, resolving to never lose money, by the miracle of compound interest, you will and you must become financially independent. When you save and invest the difference, you create another wonderful experience in your life. You develop a reservoir or a fund of what is called opportunity money. You've heard it said that if a man is not prepared for his opportunity, when it comes, it will simply make him look ridiculous. You can be living in the most abundant society in the world, but if you have no money in the bank, and even worse, if you are deeply in debt because you cannot restrain your spending for any period of time, these opportunities around you will do you no good. You will be chained to your job and terrified of losing it. You will be preoccupied with how little money you have all the time. You will feel insecure and uneasy in the presence of those who have more money than you do. You will consider them to be better than you, and you will develop an inferiority complex toward people who are doing well. You will gradually become negative and pessimistic about yourself and your possibilities. If you're not careful, you'll start to criticize and denigrate other successful people and try to think of yourself as superior to them. And all this happens because you have an empty bank account. But when you begin to accumulate money through self-discipline and long-term planning, you start to feel happy about yourself and your life. You start to become optimistic and confident. You start to attract a better and more positive type of person into your life. You become alert to opportunities and possibilities to increase your money. When you're in conversation with others, you feel better and more confident about yourself. This attitude affects all of your work and personal life. It's an absolutely wonderful feeling. I got a letter from a young woman not long ago who had been through one of my courses where I had talked about the importance of financial accumulation. She wrote and told me that she had never heard it presented in that way. She had been going merrily from month to month, spending everything she made on herself and her lifestyle. After my course, she began to save 5% of her income, then 10%, 15%, and she was at 20% by the end of the year. At that point, she had put away more than a full month of earnings. Then her boss began to demand that she work overtime for no extra pay. He began to be difficult with her and became hypercritical and impatient. As it happened, her boss treated everybody the same way, but with one difference. She didn't have to take it. After a few weeks of this treatment, she walked in and resigned and walked out the door. She said she felt absolutely wonderful about herself because she was free to walk away from a job she didn't like. The best news was contained in the last paragraph of her letter. Because she had money in the bank, she was not panicking to find another job, so she gave a lot of thought to her natural talents and abilities and to what she would most ideally like to do. She went out and interviewed a few companies that were in the field that she had decided to join. Because of her complete confidence and optimism, she was soon given two job offers, both of which paid 40% more than she was earning when she left her previous employer. She ended her letter by saying that she has never been happier, nor has she earned more money than today, and none of it would have been possible if she hadn't begun to save and pay herself first on a regular basis just a year ago. You must dedicate yourself to achieving financial independence. You must, step by step, get yourself out of debt. You must build up a financial accumulation account by paying yourself first. You must carefully nurture this money and add to this account whenever possible. You must write down clear, specific financial goals with specific deadlines and sub-deadlines, and then work toward those deadlines. You must resolve and promise to yourself that you will never, never touch this money once you've begun to put it away. As you begin to move toward financial independence, slowly at first, but then faster and faster as the years pass, you will feel absolutely wonderful about yourself. While the great majority of people are walking around worried about money, you'll be able to think more about your family, your health, your religion, your community, reading, sports, and all the things in life that you enjoy. You will free up your mind from the preoccupation that weighs on the minds of so many others. And as sure as God made little green apples, long before you had actually planned it, you will wake up one day to find that you are financially independent and that you never have to work again. It's all up to you.